Easter 2005, the fifth seminar, the fifth hour. The resurrection is now. As I awaken to now, I am resurrected, ascended. Life is known in the now instant. The resurrection is now. How do I experience the resurrection as the now? How do I experience the resurrection as the now idea? How do I know the resurrection as the now? Well, that's a good question. I know it as the now because I live in the now. I live in the awareness of what I am right now. As I awaken to now, I am resurrected, I am ascended. So, all of us would like to have this attitude of ascension. All of us would like to do this, but one of the things I have the most difficulty with Ingeborg with is having her play games. Ingeborg just is a toughie for playing games. I don't know that Ingeborg ever played many games in her life. She was always working, always a busy girl, always doing what she's supposed to do, always doing whatever requirements there were to do, and she never played games. And I think one of the biggest failures in Ingeborg's life, and this is a failure that can be remedied, but it will not be remedied. Ingeborg never had any children. She never had a bunch of little game players around her. People who love to play games, people who love to pretend, people who love to imagine, people who love to be creative. Her work was always tit for tat, and it's got to be that. Nothing more, nothing less. And if it's less, it will not be blessed. It has to be right. It has to be complete. And this is a tough road to go in life. This is a tough thing to have as a vacancy in your life. Because unless you know how to play the game, you will not arrive at your ascended consciousness. You will not arrive at your awareness of your resurrected self. Now, I've given you a little gray or white slip of ideas here. And it says, the resurrection. Play the game. What is Rex's entire life about? Playing the game. What is Button's life about? Playing his game. You see, Button goes by his instinct, and his instinct is a ratter. And so he's supposed to go out chasing rats and chasing mice and chasing rabbits and chasing anything else he can chase. Now, he wants to catch it and kill it. Button wants to do that effective job. That's his game. Those are the parameters of his game. Rex, on the other hand, he's a retriever. He will retrieve anything. He'll retrieve sticks as we walk along the path, and he'll hold that stick up to me, and he'll say, look, I've got a stick. I have retrieved this stick. Aren't I wonderful? I'm doing my natural thing of retrieving sticks. And then he'll retrieve big sticks, and he'll poke me with the big sticks as he walks along, thinking, look at how great I am. I got this great big stick. I said, yeah, it's a bother. And then, as he finishes his game, as Rex finishes his game, and he finishes his game every 3 or 4 minutes, depending upon his attention span, and he puts the stick down and looks for something else. And he puts the stick down wherever he is, in the middle of the path or in the middle of my seat or any place else. He puts the stick down, and then he goes off to do other things. Now, you see, when we say, oh, we shouldn't take his fun away from him, we shouldn't do this. Hey, that's part of the game. The game is being drawn away from, you're distracted from what you're doing. You see, the game is being distracted from what you're doing. And the easier that you are to be distracted from what you're doing, the longer it's going to take you to learn the game. When I'm playing games with all of you, and we're doing things, and then I do something to distract you, I have our handyman come to the door. And right away, all of you are saying, oh, we've got to go and serve his needs. We've got to go and meet his needs. We've got to go and talk to him and do whatever has to be. Shut up and sit down. We're playing the game here of doing our talk. We're playing the game here. He can stand out there a minute. He chose to come at his time, and so he's going to play the game that you're going to come running out there every time he comes. Well, don't do that. Let him stand there for a few minutes. You have the right to be playing your game. Now, why do you play your game encouraging him to come at a time when you're doing something else? Because you want to be distracted. Why do you create the telephone ringing when you're doing something else? You want to be distracted. Why do you create a fly flying right across the front of your face? You want to be distracted. How often does that fly fly across in front of your face? Only when you're busy doing something else. You follow me? Only when you shouldn't be distracted. And so you distract yourself. And that's the silliest thing in the world to do. To distract yourself. Okay. Jesus spent a lot of time talking to his disciples, sharing with them how they too could enjoy the resurrected life, how they too could enjoy the ascension, how they too could enjoy being master of themselves. And what did he say? He says, now listen, boys, I want you to hear what I'm saying. I want you to hear what I'm doing. I want you to hear what I'm saying. I want you to hear what I'm doing. I want you to hear what I'm saying. I want you to hear what I'm doing. Did he say that?
No.
What did he say? Come. It is done unto you according to your belief. Now, are you going to let someone distract your attention? We were watching this show about the Neverland. And in the show, they were pulling a boy up and letting him float across the stage and having a good time. Well, one of the young brothers wanted to come and pull two. He wanted to help move the kid back and forth. And so the man says, sure, you can do that. And so the man was pulling on one string and the boy was on the other. And the boy's little brother came along and said, I want to do that too. I want to do that too. I want to do that too. And the boy says, no, I'm doing it. I want to do that too. I want to do that too. And finally he distracted the other boy. So he dropped the rope and he slapped the other boy and says, no, you can't do that. And his brother came tumbling down from floating in the sky to breaking his arm on the deck of the stage. Now, the boy allowed himself to be distracted. He didn't know the seriousness of what it was that he was holding his brother up in the sky. And that if he didn't hold him, he was going to fall down and hurt himself. Now, if the little boy understood all that stuff, he still could have been distracted. Because was the man distracted? He sure was. He was distracted. He held the rope, but he didn't grab the other rope when he realized that there was a distraction there. Whenever there's a distraction there, you immediately take command. When Ellen is flying her airplane with her trainer sitting next to her, and Ellen gets all flustered. Oh, what do I do? What do I do? The trainer gently takes the wheel and holds it until she gets unflustered. The trainer is in charge. He is training her to fly. And if he lets her crash the airplane, they both die. Okay? Stupid. He's not going to let that happen. So, Ellen doesn't get flustered when she flies. Ellen doesn't do things like that. But if she did, he would be there to be her backup. But when Ellen gets in the plane alone and solos it, he is not there. He is not there to back her up. She must back up herself. She must keep her concentration total. She must keep her dedication to what she's doing 100%. Because if she just lets go of the wheel and starts putting on her makeup and putting on her eyebrows and things like that, and the plane goes, crunch, and she says, what did I do wrong? You did not concentrate on what you were supposed to be concentrating on. You understand me? You understand me?
Yes.
Now, they say the major accidents happen on the freeways, the major number, by people who are distracted while they're driving. They're shaving, they're putting on their makeup, they're adjusting the mirrors, they're adjusting the seats, they're talking to somebody, the children are arguing in the back seat, they're on their cellular phone. You see, distraction is one of the main things in life that keeps us from our spiritual path, that keeps us from our spiritual illumination, from our resurrection. Now, do you think Jesus was distracted as he was on the cross? Do you think that he let the pain of the nails in his hand bother him? The pain was there. Don't kid yourself. He chose to live in a physical body that had pain. Now, he could turn off the pain, as we all can, but it was there. It was there, but he turned it off. Now, he taught us how to do all these things. He said, it's done unto us according to our belief. Now, the boy, Peter, went to Neverland because of his belief. You are here at this seminar because of your belief. You're not here just because we're going to have some pleasant meals and some pleasant company and some pleasant chatting. You're here because you believe that maybe you will understand a little more about the resurrection, and maybe you will be able to make that step yourself. Maybe you'll be able to make that step yourself. Are you ready to make that step? Well, here on your sheet here, it says, the resurrection, play the game. Jesus played the game. He believed he was divine. He believed he was God. He believed he was special, and he acted that way. Do you, who go around here saying, I'm God, God I am, I'm God, God, do you believe you're special? Do you act that way? Well, sometimes I wonder if that's the kind of God that you are. Ooh-wee, you're in for a lot of interesting experiences. When you act like you are God, how does God act in your life? How do you, as God, act? How do you, as God, respond to whatever is thought, said, or done? How do you, as God, respond? Think about that. Do you respond, if you will, as an angel, as purity, as goodness, as harmony, as right action, as truth? Well, if you do, then you're in the right ballpark. If you respond with hatred or anger or being unhappy about something, then you're not in the ballpark of positive thinking, that's for sure. You see, people can readily take the word positive thinking where they cannot take the word being a spiritual master, you know. People find it very difficult to be spiritually illumined. Oh, only God can do that. Only the saints can do that. Only angels can do that. I cannot be spiritually illumined. Because if I were spiritually illumined, I would be just wonderful. I would be super fantastic. I'd be glorious. Now, is that true for you? Is that true for you? What is the truth for you? Where are you? What is your goal for yourself? What is your dream for yourself? What is your ideal for yourself? Your ideal for yourself is one thing, to be yourself and to have fun. But what do you consider fun? Now, ask Ingeborg what she considers fun, and she considers fun picking up sticks around the yard. She considers fun going over and cuddling her little black cat. She considers fun taking care of the dogs, loving them and feeding them and playing with them. She does not consider fun being with people. Being with people is okay, but it's not fun for her. Fun for her are doing the things that I mentioned. Those are fun. Now, Dorothea, what does she consider fun? Dorothea considers fun being with people. She likes to be surrounded by people. She likes to have people come and ask her questions and talk to her and sort of be little clones in her life. She likes to have people in her world that she can feel sorry for. She likes to have people in her world that she can go and help that need her. She likes to be needed, you know. Well, now, she is creating herself in a world that has plenty of that. Now, she was telling us that she has this people who are managing the apartment series that she lives in, and the one girl got fired. And her husband, too? So the couple, no?
He works
elsewhere. Oh, so she was managing it and she got fired. Okay. So Dorothea felt sorry for her. Dorothea felt, if she moves, I'll move. Dorothea felt this, that, and the other thing. Now, who is running the show? Is it Dorothea or the manager? Is Dorothea creating a new manager in there who is going to be so fantastic, so glorious, that Dorothea will say, my gosh, I didn't know managers could be like this. I didn't know they could be so thoughtful, so loving, so kind, so gentle. The manager we had before was a beautiful lady, a beautiful girl. But the thing is, what Dorothea did not see was all the work left undone that manager did, was all the important things that in running the management of that apartment series that she did not take care of. You understand me? But she didn't see that because Dorothea was merely listening to what the lady had to say and listening to what she spoke about herself. Now, you see, that's a distraction. Now, Dorothea, what's the girl's name?
Charlotte.
So when Dorothea thinks of Charlotte, she says, oh, Charlotte is so lovely. Oh, Charlotte is so beautiful. Oh, Charlotte is... Now, from today, Dorothea, think about Charlotte and think that Charlotte is a competent person. Charlotte is a good manager. Charlotte is a responsible woman. Just think those things. Whatever Charlotte's doing, wherever Charlotte's going, that will be her forte. She will be a competent, capable, wonderful person doing whatever she chooses to do. Now, if you make excuses for her in your mind, if you make excuses for her ignorance, for her stupidity, for her lack of responsibility in doing her job, you don't help her. But if you see her doing all those things that have to be done and doing it in a very proper manner, then you are being the greatest blessing to her. But if you are part of the garbage heap that she is in, of thinking that she can get away with doing things, not doing things that she's supposed to be doing, and nobody will notice it, then you're not helping her. So, you see, in the world that you consider yourself in, and in the world that you enjoy being in, you are in charge. You're the master. And you are seeing everybody in that world doing things that are they're supposed to be doing things that are part of their role, and they're doing it well. Now, Dorothea, I'm going to hit you again. Why are you killing off everybody in your apartment series? Why are people dying now and then in there? Just because they happen to be elderly people. Why don't you see every single one of those people whole and perfect? See every single one of those people young and dynamic. See every single one of those people full of energy and power so they don't, and I don't mean that you see they don't need their wheelchairs, they don't need their crutches, they don't need their cane, but see every one of them walking without help and running around and dashing up and down the stairs and being young punk kids, you know, just having a great old time. Now, would that be a gift from you to your creation that would be unbelievable? That'd be utterly fabulous? Wouldn't it be great? Now, what would happen? What would happen, Dorothea? You would be the youngest of the lot. You would be the most responsive and the most beautiful of the lot, because you cannot see other people as young and dynamic and wonderful unless you are. So when you start with yourself, seeing yourself young, dynamic, and fantastic, you create a world of people out there. Everybody in your elderly complex are now young spring chickens, you know? Now, isn't that a great idea? Isn't that what life is all about? Right. Okay, now, let's get busy on that. And let's get busy in creating your world from your God center. Your original purity and integrity. Now, if you take this challenge, this task that I give you, and you begin to see yourself living from your original purity and integrity, and you begin seeing all of them, then they will not be a distraction to you. They will be not an encouragement, but they will be a reflection of your own purity and goodness, which they are right now. Every elderly person that you see who is incapacitated by anything is a reflection of yourself. And that's dumb, you know? That's dumb. Why is it so many women see other women having pain in giving birth to a child? Because that's what they experience. And so they know that everybody else experiences pain because they experience pain. Of the 100 ladies giving birth to children, one or two has pain. All the rest is nothing. You understand? And that's true. That's true. If all of them had pain, none of them would ever want a child to be born at home. And none of them would ever want children. Who needs to be having pain on purpose when all the children do is give you a pain as they're growing up, you know? So, you see, you're the master. You're in charge. You're God. And you want to play the game. And as you play the game, wonderful things happen. Now, Ingeborg, what kind of people are you surrounded with?
Harmonious people.
You're surrounded by harmonious people?
Yes.
You said more?
Happy people,
loving people,
and having good ideas.
And having good ideas. Okay, now, why are you saying that that's the kind of people you're surrounded with when you tell me sometimes that there are other kinds of people surrounding you? Now, you have to be consistent.
Yes.
You have to be consistent and say in your heart, I am happy. I am wonderful. I am a good person. And when you say that about yourself, you'll see it in others. And if you think that you are a poor nothing, then that's what you'll see in others, poor nothings. You know what I mean? And that's not fair for you to do to yourself. It's okay if you do that to others, because if you see them as poor nothings, then you're the one who sees them as poor nothings, and they don't. They look at you and they say, what's that little old tramp doing over there? That little old lady who's got no problem, that has no joy out of life, you know? But you are the joy creator. You see, Jesus played the game. He believed he was divine. He believed he was God. He believed he was special, and he acted that way. Do you believe you're special? Then act that way. Act that way. Act that way with your life filled with power and vitality and imagination and illumination. Act that way. You understand?
Yeah.
That's very important. And if you don't act that way, nobody gives a hoot and holler in hell about you. That is, unless they act the way you do. If everybody here in this room would say, I am God, I am the allness, I am good, they could not, if they believed it, they could not see anyone in the world unlike themselves. This is why I say to you, and I have said this for years, I cannot conceive of one person on the face of the earth who has not had my experiences, my life, and my enjoyment, and all of the happiness that I have in and out life. Well, Herb, you got some problems occasionally. So what? What's my attitude about it? What's my attitude about it? Am I pushed down by it?
No.
If I'm pushed down by anything that comes in my life, then I am possessed by that. What about you? What are you possessed by? What sort of things are you possessed by, Ellen? Are you possessed by the fact that you're God? Are you possessed by the fact that you are good and very good? Are you possessed by the fact that, anything you turn your attention to is done now? Huh?
Yes.
Well, thank you. Yes. You see, this is what it's all about. Right, Sylvia?
Yes.
Is it any other way?
No.
Now, when are we going to begin acting like it here? We have this note. Jesus played the game. He believed he was divine. He believed he was God. He believed he was special, and he acted that way. Can you say, Sylvia believed, played the game. Sylvia believed she was God, divine. Sylvia believed she was God. Sylvia believed she was special, and Sylvia acted that way. Sounds good, doesn't it? Okay. Tell yourself you're divine. Tell yourself you're wonderful. Tell yourself again and again and again and again and again how wonderful you are, how wonderful you are, how wonderful you are. I told you a story that we'll probably put on a thought for today or something like that, but I told you a story about Mrs. DeShort. Now, who's going to speak up first and tell me what kind of a child I was?
Humble.
Loving.
Loving,
yeah. Caring.
Happy! Humble, loving, caring child. Yeah, but I was happy. I was a happy kid. I went to talk to my neighbor, Mr. Kunlit, because he was interesting. I had fun. I was not humble, and I was not caring, but I was enjoying myself. I really was happy. I did perhaps what a lot of other kids didn't do, but they would have done it too if they knew all the fun I was having, you know? And when I went to Mr. DeShort, Mother said, she wants to talk to you. I went over there, this old bitch, what does she want, you know? And I went in there, and I'm a happy guy. And so she said, would you mind working for me? Work! Money! Wonderful, you know? 10 cents for the day. Wonderful. So I worked for her. I was 10 years old. Man, I was the richest kid on the block. I had cash, and it was wonderful. Now, was I happy? What happened to Mrs. DeShort's noxious attitude? Huh?
Positive, loving. Nice.
It disappeared. What replaced it?
Wow.
Did she like me?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Did she enjoy my company? Oh, yes. Did she think I did a good job?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Did she think I was able to do even a better job? Oh, yes. She challenged me to the ultimate. But I was a happy boy. And so I created happy people. Was Mr. Kunmich unhappy with my presence?
No.
Did he enjoy my company?
Yes, of course.
And later I'll tell you about a little gift that he gave me. Remember? The Hubmobile, the car. It was up on blocks in his garage. And he gave me this car. And I took all my friends for drives every day. We got in that car up on blocks. And we just, is in the garage. We drove that everywhere. Our imagination was in high gear. We had lots of fun. But you see, when you give the gifts that you receive back, you cannot imagine what they'd be. They don't have to be anything. The gift is already given back to you by the fact that you give yourself to it. And it was wonderful. It was fantastic. Okay, now, tell yourself you're divine. Did I tell myself I was divine? No.
You were.
I was divine. I lived that divinity. I didn't have to tell myself. Did I tell myself I was God? Oh, I never even thought about that. I knew I was everything. I knew I was the center of the universe. So did all the other kids, you know. I knew that I was great. So did all the other kids. You know, I knew that, but I knew it. And I lived from that point of view. And I created. Now, I didn't tell you another thing. I worked for Mr. Schwartz. But every day when I first came home from school, I went down to Mrs. Terry's house, I believe it was, near the corner. Her son raised motorcycles. Making noise with them all the time. And so she had an Irish setter, a beautiful red Irish setter dog, who was running back and forth on a metal line in her yard. And she asked me to take him for a walk every day for about a half hour. So every day I walked him for about an hour. We went down into the valley, down by the river. We went everywhere in the woods. We just had the greatest time. And I was paid for it. And I got 10 cents a week for doing that, for taking him out for a half an hour a day, which was an hour every day. And then when I came back, then I went to Mrs. Schwartz. Of course, I fitted in Mr. Kunmich there somehow, too. But all of these things were fantastic things. All of these things were glorious. I didn't do it because I wanted the money. I did it because, hey, this will be fun. And then she said, and I'm paying you. And I said, well, oh, boy. What a wonderful experience. And you know, as I did those things, my boyfriends were all with me, too. And we all went to the woods together and had a great time with the dog. And I didn't have to feed the dog. I didn't have to brush him. I didn't have to do anything. All I had to do was just love him and have fun with him for a while every day. But you see, this is what happens when you're divine. You create a divine world around you. Oh, we had floods down in the valley, when the river would overflow, rainy season, and would come up on the banks, and we would have to back away from the bank because it was unstable, and the river ran pretty fast, the Menominee River. But we were God, every one of us. None of us thought we were going to drown. None of us thought we were going to do something. We all followed the divine wisdom within us, which kept us away from falling into harm's path. And we did it. Now, we didn't tell ourselves to do it or tell ourselves not to do it. We just lived in that divine presence within us. Now, if we had said that to ourselves at that time, we would have thought that's rather spectacular. That's big talk. But now, as we look back at it, that was what we did. We lived in our divine awareness of who we were, and we had no problems. So, tell yourself you're divine. You're adults now. Tell yourself you're divine. You already know it. You already believe it. But you got to tell yourself. You got to say to your husband, dear, when you walk in the house is just like a new place. Your presence here makes this heaven on earth. And love, I love you. So do you think if women would tell that to their husbands, that their husbands would go to the bar first? Ha! They drink at the bar at their own home of the nectar of the gods, the ideal joy and harmony and peace that they get from their family. See, this is what a real mother and a real wife does. And a real husband, he knows he's God. And he beneficently says to his family, bless you, my dear family. I love you. Come, you can come into my arms now. But that's what they do. That's what they do. Think about it anytime. Think about it, how your fathers were and how men that you have known were with their families. They were beneficent. They were agreeing to hug them and kiss them because they were divine. They are God. They are wonderful. See, they knew that. And that's kind of interesting, isn't it? But you see, this is the way the game works. Tell yourself you're divine. Tell yourself you're divine. Be divine. Act divine. Live divine. And as you do this, you begin to realize what the resurrection is all about. You are coming out of the old attitude about yourself, saying that you are limited, you are no good, you are unworthy, you are undesirable. Those are all silly things. But those are things that our parents have taught us, that our families have taught us, that our world has taught us. You know, I had a friend, and I told you about Jeffrey Etherington, who got straight A's on everything and plus. And then some of our buddies were close to that. And they were angry as could be whenever they got a B, not an A. If they didn't get an A, they thought the world was coming down. What's mother going to think of me? What's dad going to think of me? I got a B, you know, or I got an A minus, you know. In those days, A plus A, A minus B plus B, B minus, and so on like that. You know, they tried to have more scale to work with. And that's what the number scale is, too. But they were just so upset. And every time they'd come up and say that, I'd say to them, hey, you guys, you have the knowledge. You have the understanding. The grade doesn't matter. I said, if you want to worry about the grade, look at mine. Because I was a C student. And I had C's on virtually everything. Oh, I had my occasional A's just for the fun of it. But I was a C student, and I didn't have to prove anything to anybody. And mother never concerned herself about my grades. She always says, do your best. Enjoy it. Have fun. Never worried. My dad was never worried. I don't know that he ever even looked at my grades. But the thing is, that was another story. That was another story. I didn't create that. I created myself, much like Gregor, pretty much out of the house. Working with the neighbors, working with relatives, working with friends. Always being around. At the Douglas Meyer home, you know. And his mother always enjoyed having me come over to be with their four kids, you know. And it was a great experience. But you see, tell yourself you're divine. I knew I was divine. I knew I was, and you do too. You do too. So now live this way and express this way. Okay, tell everyone in your world by your actions and belief in yourself that you are divine. Let everyone in your world see by your actions and your belief in yourself that you are divine. Can you follow that? Can you do that? How does a divine person act? Now, is Rex a divine person? Does Rex lie on his back and wiggle and scratch his back on the carpet and think he's just having the greatest time? Does he just flop his arms open and have absolute confidence in the world about him? Is anybody going to step on Rex? No. Is anyone going to bother Rex in any way? No. When Rex wants to, he gets up. When he wants to, he lies down, unless I tell him. You see, we're masters of our world. We're the creators of our world. We're in charge of our world. And everything that we do is our choice. And because it's our choice, all that matters is that we are the master. All that matters is that we are the master. And being the master, we are always in charge. Being the master, we always put the cause in motion to bring about any effect that we want in our life. So let's look further here on our slip. So believe you are divine, that you live in every aspect of your being. So believe you are divine, that you live it in every aspect of your being. Be so confident that you are divine. Be so aware that you are divine, that you live it in every aspect of your being. Now, I would like each one of you, starting now, to look at your body a number of times a day and praise your body. Praise your arms, your feet, your legs, your nose. Praise everything about you. And in praising everything about you, see it good and very good. Praise everything about you. Because we have tomorrow yet for our wonderful seminar here. And this is like having 12 years. Because in what we're going to do between now and the end of tomorrow is going to be a lifetime of conviction for ourselves, of saying how wonderful we are, saying how beautiful we are, saying how complete we are, and how magnificent we are. Can you see that? When you can start saying those things about you, you will start having those things happen about you, and you will start being a part, if I can say that word, a part of the resurrection. In other words, we can say you're at the initial stages of the resurrection, and tomorrow evening you'll be at the final stage of the resurrection. And then it would just be a matter of accepting it or not accepting it. Because you are divine. You are whole and perfect. You are wonderful. You are fantastic. You are glorious. You are everything that you could ever want to be. But you don't claim that for yourself. And the reason you don't claim it for yourself is because you think it's too good to be true. You think it is too wonderful for little old you to enjoy. And that is so idiotic. That's so idiotic. Now, the mother in the film did that too. And she didn't live very long. So, don't do that. See, when we cough like that, we are allowing our inner self to be master of our outer self. And we just say, I am perfect. Can you say that? I am perfect. I am perfect. I am perfect. Now, when we say that, then we begin to experience it. And we want to experience it. Now, how do we experience it? By being consistent with it. So, now, look at these words here. These words come from the word resurrection. If you look up the word resurrection in the thesaurus, you will come with renaissance. Now, what does renaissance mean? Sylvia?
A new beginning.
You can look at any words on here, and they all intermingle and interchange with one another. Yes, they're a new beginning and a new birth, and it's wonderful. Okay. Renaissance, isn't that a nice word?
Mm-hmm.
The Renaissance. So, we are experiencing the Renaissance this week. We're experiencing a new birth. We're being born into our reality. Where were we stuck for a while yesterday? In the birth canal.
Oh.
Remember? Oh, so quickly you forget, but that's okay. But you were in the birth canal almost an hour. and you were enjoying it. Now, it's a rebirth. Now, is it a birth of ourselves over again? A birth of ourselves reborn again? Is it a reincarnation?
As an awareness.
A what's that?
An awareness.
It's an awareness. We haven't got that on here. It's an awareness. And that's good, too. In fact, that's a word you might write on there, an awareness. It's a new start. It's a rebirth, a new beginning, a resurgence, a renewal. And from the dictionary, they have the word reincarnation, which means born again, which means to be born again in this body or another body. And that's interesting. Revival. Oh, our religion, old-time religions would love that. That's a revival. See, resurrection is a revival. That's exciting, huh? Think about what kind of revivals you have been involved in your life. What kind of revivals have you been involved in your life? Have you been involved in a revival of awareness of your mathematics? You know, you took mathematics in school, and then you had to do some addition and multiplication, which you hadn't done for a long time, so you had to sort of revive that old skill in you, and that's a revival. And Ellen would say to her husband, "Sweetheart, you're wonderful." He'd say, "Well, I know that." And she'd say, "Well, you're glorious." He'd say, "I know that." Then she'd say, "Sweetheart, when you walk into the house here, it just lit up as though it is ready to start being itself again." And he says, "I know that." And you say, "Sweetheart, you exasperate me." He says, "I know that." And she says, "Sweetheart, I'm sick and tired of you knowing that." He says, "I know that." Now, why does Ellen create alias saying those things every time she says something that she thinks is going to be so significant? Because she wants a response. And you say to your son, Diego, "Diego, you are a genius." And what does Diego say?
"I know that."
So, you see, alias is only being a young child. He is only being natural by saying, "I know that." And you expect a more intellectual and a more emotional response, and you don't realize that that is a tremendously intellectual and emotional response, because it says the whole thing. "I know that. You're a good boy." "I know that. I know that. I know that." "You're a bad boy." "Yeah, I know." "Sorry, I know. Yeah, I know that." It's the same thing. Now, what do we do? How do we say these things, you know? How do we say, "I know that," in love and joy and harmony about ourselves? How do we say that without offending ourselves? How do we say, "I know that"? We say that by doing this. Tell everyone in your world by your actions and your belief in yourself that you are divine. As we tell everyone in our world by how we act that we are divine, then we are saying, "I know that," but we are saying it without saying it. And that's a wonderful thing to do. So, you see, we have this resurgence, this renewal, this reincarnation, the revival, the regeneration, the reestablishment, the recovery, the reawakening, the reappearance, the recurrent activity, the repetition, reemergence, the retaining, the comeback, the restoration, the reinstatement, the return, the restitution, the reinstallation, resurgence we have again here, renewal we have again here, revitalization, recovery, revivification. Some of those are interesting words, aren't they? Now, what does it mean? Well, I would like you to take the resurrection as a concept, and I'd like you to take the R and the E off of all these words here. So, naissance, renaissance, the renewal of the being. And if R-E means renewal and naissance means the being, then I just say the being, naissance. And if rebirth means to be born again with a new attitude, I just say be born with that new attitude. And a new start? Well, start, period. Every start that you've had in the past has not been a start. It's been a fault. Now, when I blow the whistle, start running. Stop, stop, stop. He didn't have his toe in the right place. Back up, get in the starting line again. See what I mean? And so we're going to restart. We're going to restart. No, you're not going to restart. You're going to start for the first time. You're not going to take restart as the name of the game. You're going to take start. Follow me?
Mm-hmm.
You see, this is what we do too often. This is what we do too often. We, Ellen?
Yes?
What kind of causes do you deal with?
A cause.
What kind of causes had we sometimes talked about?
New cause.
And what's the difference between a new cause and a cause?
Every cause is itself.
Every cause is equally significant. There cannot be an old cause and a new cause. There can only be a cause. For an old cause was a cause all by itself that stood on its own feet that was equally important. And a new cause is just another cause that is equally important. And who knows? The cause that you're putting in motion now may have certain ramifications to it that it never had before. That any type of thinking in that direction never had before. So it is, in fact, a cause. What's your first wife like? What's your second wife like? What's your third wife like? What's your first husband like? What's your second husband? What's your third husband? I tell people that's not true. In this life, so long as you are alive and so long as they are alive, you will only commit yourself to one husband or one wife in your entire lifetime. If they die, then they have broken the vow. But are you going to break the vow because they break the vow? The saying goes, till death does us part. But did you marry that person in perpetuity? Did you marry that person forever? Did you plan on being married to that person forever and you don't like it so you kill him? You know, so the death will do you part, you know. How did you kill him? I ignored him. How did you kill him? I had him take a ship, and the ship never came back. Actually, he's not dead. He's living somewhere else and unable to communicate with me. But, how could you marry anybody else if he's still alive? Well, nobody knows he's still alive except me. Well, how can you marry him if he's still alive? Because I say that as far as I'm concerned, he's dead. Well, what constitutes dead? As far as you're concerned, constitutes dead? Or does a medical doctor constitute dead? Or does a spiritual doctor constitute dead? What constitutes dead? You see, we don't even know about that. We think that just because the body doesn't move anymore, that the being is dead. Did you marry the body or the being?
The being.
You married the being? Hoo-wee! Yeah. So, there'll be no death, will there? Yeah. There cannot, because life is eternal. So, you see, when we deal with these facts, we deal with these concepts, we have to deal with them so carefully and so powerfully and so wonderfully because they change everything in our world. They change everything in our thought. They change everything in everything that we do. And we have to be on top of it. As I awaken to now, I am resurrected and ascended. Life is known in the now incident, in the now instant. You're doing some pretty fantastic things, and you don't know about it. You don't even care about it, but you're doing it. So I say to you, okay, let's prepare for our sixth lecture. And the sixth lecture is kind of interesting. Kind of. One-pointedly living in the now. There is only one direction for my thinking, and living in the now is not boring. It has its own excitement. So, have a lovely pause. And we will see you when we see you.
Thank you.
I love you. I love you. I love you.